from the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Kate Evans returns to the show this week, and she was with us last time, about 10 minutes ago, when her first novel appeared, For the May Queen, and now she's back with a strong second novel entitled Complementary Colors, and it's really a pleasure to say. Kate Evans, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Hi, Gary. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, your life has been in upheaval since the publication of your first novel. You want to talk about that at all?
That's right. Sure.
Well, let's do it this way. Your book, your first book, For the May Queen, just to recap for our listeners, it was kind of a coming-of-age story about a young girl who is experiencing her first time away from home and so forth.
Right, she's 17, going on 18. Wait a minute, isn't there a song? And yes, it's about living in the dorms, first year living in the dorms. There's a lot of California in it, a lot of road trips, a lot of things.
Sex.
A lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it.
Now, I thought so.
In some ways, this book is sort of a sequel. I mean, it's kind of, is this the same character, you know, years later or not at all?
No, she has a completely different name.
She has a different name and a different hair color. But other than that, she seems possibly somewhat like the same person.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, that they're both created by Kate Evans and that there's some kind of autobiographical quality to these stories.
Yeah, and similar voice, I think, and similar energy for sure. And absolutely some autobiographical components. I really enjoy writing the autobiographical novel because I can base what happens in the book, you know, on my experience, and yet I have complete freedom to change whatever I want to change and make things happen as I wish they would have happened or make them worse because conflict is the heat of the novel.
Mm-hmm. And you did, again, choose the first person as your style.
My driving force, that's right, my narrative. So, yeah, there definitely are similarities, and certainly because both characters are, you know, a piece of who I am or an amalgamation of different aspects of me, I can definitely see the connections between the two characters for sure.
So, you know, I'm going to, since it's a novel and I don't want to give it all away, I'll let you, you know, kind of tell us what you think we need to know. It's about a little boy and it's Christmas.
A boy and his dog at Christmas, and he's waiting for Santa. Santa just won't come down the chimney. No, it's about a woman who is 31. And her whole life, she has loved men, and suddenly she finds herself falling in love with a woman, a complete surprise to her and others around her.
Right, and it happens in school. She's sort of at, I don't want to give away too much.
That's
but
fine.
So she's this woman who is kind of dissatisfied with her life, but she doesn't necessarily think. That she is sexually dissatisfied, or is she?
Right. She's not, she doesn't really make that connection per se. I mean, she has a pretty hot connection sexually with her boyfriend, with whom she lives. And yet there's lots of turmoil in that relationship, unlike, you know, all other relationships, just this particular one. Lots of turmoil in that relationship, and she traveled, lived abroad for a while, has been going to school, can't quite figure out, feels some sort of itch of dissatisfaction, and so she takes a poetry class, and that's where she encounters actually two dykes in the class. And this is the early 90s, and so, you know, pre Will and Grace, pre Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and not a whole lot of straight, suburban, middle-class people had that much access to queer culture, queer people. And so this is all new for her, new and very exciting.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's interesting because the it's definitely a period piece. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the novel that happened politically at the time and so forth. She right. becomes involved in politics and so forth.
Right. She's working for the Bill Clinton campaign.
And I guess in the sequel we'll find out if she was happy or not happy with President Clinton. So don't ask that.
And with loving a woman.
Right. That's going to be the next book, no doubt. So we'll get to that in a minute. But before we talk about that, I want to ask about the sex scenes, because you know how I love them. And
yeah.
And there are some sex scenes, although they're not as quickly apparent as they are in the first book. I mean, they were on the first book, they were like the first page. But this one, you have to wait a few chapters until you get to any really good ones. But
wait a minute, what are the good ones? I want to know, Gary.
Well, I mean, you write them very tastefully. And so I wonder, did you think about that? I mean, what goes through your mind when you're writing that? And how much do you want to say? And I mean, did you say exactly what you wanted to say? Did you tone them down? Did you, what?
Oh, do we ever say exactly what we want to say? You know, writing always does, you know, more than we want and less than we know and vice versa.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting you'd ask that question, because that was actually trying to write what felt like a true, authentic sex scene is what drove my first novel, For the May Queen. I was just that sort of where that first chapter, it is where that first chapter begins, when the protagonist has sex essentially with a stranger her first night away from home, living in the dorms. I didn't so much think about the sex scenes per se in this novel, except in terms of how they were driving character. And I did know, of course, there would be a... I don't know how to say this without the pun intended or pun unintended, but there would be a climactic sex scene. And I was sort of more aware of writing the women and women with women sex scenes versus the women-man sex scenes, I think in part just because I never had before.
Right, and you know, most readers, I would say probably, I don't know, maybe that's not true. Maybe most readers of this book have experienced that. I don't know how many lesbian readers you have or whatever. But I mean, from my point of view, I want details. You know,
what do they do in bed?
Yeah, not from a totally purient, you know, interest, but
not totally.
Yes, there's some of that, but
sure.
Also, I mean, as a matter of fact, as kind of a reaction to that, that is. Almost whenever you see lesbian scenes in movies or whatever, they're done, you know, staged by men for men with men in mind.
Gee, which exact films are you referring to, Gary?
I guess maybe in books also. So, you know, you have sort of an opportunity, but you don't really reveal in great detail.
Oh no.
Do you?
What did I leave out, Gary?
Okay, never mind. Let's move on to the next. I'm talking with Kate Evans for a while, and her new novel is called Complementary Colors. And it does talk about a woman and her sexual awakening, her homosexual awakening, I guess you would say. And that aspect of the book is autobiographical. Is that all right to talk about?
Sure.
Yeah. So you found yourself in a similar situation. You were... going to school and taking poetry classes. I mean, how much of it is you and how much of it is her?
Yeah, a lot of it as far as the, you know, basic kind of setting. The characters, certain aspects of them are definitely based on people who were part of my life then. And yet, in many ways, they're very different, you know. But as far as just the basic autobiographical component of, you know, I was 31 years old, had... never even consciously thought of being attracted to a woman, or had maybe in retrospect, when I look back at it, think, oh, well, maybe certain energies I always construed as, quote, straight. I mean, I think that sexuality is much more fluid than our regular, quote, regular ways that we interact in the world would allow us to sort of think about or acknowledge. So at any rate, for whatever reason, at that time in my life, at 31, I suddenly was able to see, oh, wow, this is a line I could cross over and I might enjoy it. And so I did.
Okay. And I'm glad.
But
are you?
Sure. It's perfectly fine with me.
I'm so glad,
Gary. This Polaroid's over. No, that's rude. I'm sorry. I forgot to say that.
No, that's fine. Here you go.
Oh, by the way, we should point out to our audience, because we're listening on the radio, it's very hot in our room. This is the first time we've done a From the Bookshelf completely nude. Both Kate and I are...
Well, not completely, but close.
Yeah. tell me a little bit about the writing process. So you wrote your first book, and did you have this book in mind when you were writing that?
No.
And so when you were done with For the May Queen, you immediately said, "Oh, I want to see what happens and talk about this other aspect."
No, I actually there was some lag time. I had finished For the May Queen after I'd written a collection of short stories. And then I went through the whole rigmarole with agents and publishing and all of that. And then during that time, I was writing stories and poems. And then I had false starts on a couple of novels. And then this one just sort of came together when I sat down with a friend and essentially drummed up an outline that the novel pretty closely sticks to. Divergences from that.
Well, are you a writer that has a ton of stories that are rattling around in your head, and you can see the next seven novels that you're writing, or are you like, oh, I better get started and sit down with a blank slate?
It's more like I have a ton of characters rattling around in my head, a ton of conflicts, which to me, character and conflict drive story, not the other way around, for my own writing, and. So that's more what I have rattling around in my brain.
So with a novel like this, and it's about 300 pages or something, 250 pages. So you had an outline, and then you start writing. How much revision do you do? Are you a hunt and peck? Do you labor over each sentence, or do you write fast and then go back and revise? Or
it really varies, but with this novel, because I had done a lot of upfront work, which was different from For the May Queen, as I said, For the May Queen began with this idea of this just trying to write what felt like a true awkward sex scene. This one was this idea of wanting to write the coming out story in a different way. and then, so I think this one, because I had done a lot of upfront work thinking about characters, I'd actually named the characters, I'd done some character sketches, I'd never done anything like that before. I had a pretty good idea, and so it wrote itself pretty fast. And then I spent a couple of months combing through it, getting feedback from people whose opinions I respect, and spending time on revisions that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you some personal questions, and the thing is to keep in mind, Kate and I are friends, but also nobody ever listens to From the Bookshelf, so you don't have to feel like you're revealing this to the whole world.
Okay, great.
There's no one listening right now.
All right. And they don't care that we're naked.
but now, in your own personal life, you became a lesbian, or you had a lesbian relationship. I don't know how you want to say it. Mm-hmm. And then you got married.
Right.
And
several times to the same woman. I mean, in the process of being together over the course of 15 years, when Gavin Newsom decided to break the law and allow same-sex couples to marry in, what was that, 03, I believe, we'd already been together for however many years, 10 years or something. And as you can tell, I'm very good with numbers, being a writer and all. And so we did. We went up to the city with some friends and got married at San Francisco City Hall, and I wrote a piece about that, nonfiction piece. It was published in a literary journal. And then, I'm always writing my life, and then, let's see, we got, actually when we were initially together, we decided that we wanted to be together. We sort of did our own private little thing. And then when same-sex marriage was made legal in California, we got married in that window before it was overturned by Prop 8. And so...
So you had a legal marriage.
Right. In addition to being... And then we also, when we lived in Seattle, and then when we lived in lived in the Bay Area, we were registered domestic partners. So we were coming at it from all angles.
But now, if we can get into that, your relationship is over now.
That's right. in the process of being legally disentangled.
So now because you got that window, now you have to legally disentangle.
Yeah, you know, marriage equality comes first and then divorce equality.
That's right. So now, would you say that you're a lesbian, or would you say that you had a lesbian relationship, and that you're, what would you say?
I'm a has-bean. Or a wasbian.
So you don't consider yourself a lesbian then?
No, I don't.
So then, do you now? So let's look at complementary colors again then. Mm-hmm. So looking at it now from your current standpoint, where you are right now, would you tell the story the same way, or do you have a different opinion about it?
Wow. I'm working on something right now that has some lesbian characters in it. And, of course, I mean, the answer always is that your life experience is going to change how you view your writing, how you view your characters. I mean, that's a given. I don't know. I think I'd have to think about more specifically. It hasn't been that long since she and I split. So this is all very fresh to me. I'm very much in a transitional time in my life. And, so I'm not sure about that.
That's okay. You don't have to be sure. We're not going to hold you to it since no one's listening. But if you are listening, if you're just joining us, we're talking with, you missed all the good stuff. Yeah, we're talking with Kate Evans, and her second novel is called Complementary Colors. But we'll talk about the title, if you would, Complementary Colors.
Sure. The woman that the narrator, whose name is Gwen, falls in love with, her name is Jamie, and Jamie is an artist, and they both are poets. And Jamie is the one who introduces Gwen to this idea of color theory, and so literally and metaphorically, symbolically, Gwen is beginning to see in new ways. And there are many different manifestations of that. So the use of art and poetry in the book resonates out. And there is a moment in a later chapter where Gwen literally thinks she almost sees auras around people, and she's not that kind of girl. She's a very pragmatic girl, young woman. There are scenes in Santa Cruz,
yes.
And then the Santa Cruz stuff
happens
later. Bookshop Santa Cruz makes an appearance in the novel. A lot of it also takes place over the hill in San Jose and at San Jose State.
Right. Well, I'm trying to find the right way to ask this question. Are you disappointed? I mean, obviously you're disappointed that your relationship fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a certain part of you that's disappointed that it fell apart even though it was a lesbian relationship? I mean, in other words, it wasn't...
Oh, I think that was part of the problem, that we were sort of this iconic lesbian couple. And I think in some ways that may have hindered us from looking deeply at some of our issues, perhaps. So it's really can be a problem to become an iconic couple. I think it can weigh heavy on a relationship in ways you don't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not the first woman who is a lesbian and a writer who's done, or an artist who's been very outspoken about equal rights and about sexual orientation and the fluidity of sexuality and all those kinds of things, who then later, when her relationship split up, ended up, you know, dating men. And there are a number of examples of that. One of the best books, I think, that I've come across at this point about it is called Apples and Oranges. It's by a woman named Jan Clausen. She was living a lesbian life in a different era than I was, probably, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And then coming out of that, she has some really interesting, insightful things to say about it. But as I say, this is all pretty fresh to me, so I'm a...
Well, that's why we're torturing you here.
I like it. Thank you.
Well... Are you embarrassed about things that you publicly said or stances that you've taken? Do you wish you hadn't done those things?
Not at all.
That's good. That's good. I mean, there's a political aspect to homosexuality, which is kind of a subtext in Complementary Colors, in that, you know, we're talking about gay marriage, and I believe that at some point people will think, why would anybody care? Why was anybody mm-hmm. even so concerned about it back way back in the beginning of the 21st century, any more than, you know, people now no longer care about interracial marriage, even though it was against the law until 1967 in several states and so forth.
Right.
So, was that a consideration when you were writing the book? Is that why you brought politics into it? Were you thinking about the political aspect of it?
No, I think that politics came into the book because they impinge on the characters in certain ways, and there were lots of things that Gwen never even thought about until she fell in love with a woman. I was really unaware of things that were off her radar. And so she's also surprised. She becomes surprised that some of the queer characters, queer people that she meets in the book are not as political as she thinks they should be. And so, you know, she comes in guns blazing on the heels of heterosexual privilege and is still... and it's also just her personality, you know. She's a very outspoken woman.
Well, okay, so now as a writer, and you've sort of had this identity, you know, as a writer, as a person who's a lesbian. So, mm-hmm. And it's very new, and you're not sure. But,
right.
It's changed a whole lot of aspects of your life. In other words, I guess that's one of the interesting things about homosexuality is we label someone homosexual, even though no matter how much sex you have, it's only going to be a really teeny tiny part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't usually label people as heterosexual. He's a big hetero. You know, we don't do that much.
There are some people that Tiger call it hets breeders, but anyway.
but generally speaking, you know, we're much more apt to label someone as gay
than
straight. And it's a pretty small part of a person's life, and probably, you know, at some point, hopefully, an insignificant characteristic. I mean, maybe not insignificant, but not the thing that would label them.
Well, if you think about it, in many ways, you know, heterosexuality is essentially invisible in our society, and invisibility is often characterized as, oh, you don't want to be invisible, but in many ways it's a place of privilege. Right? You don't have to call attention to yourself if you're a straight man and say something about your wife, but if you're a gay man and you say something about your husband, that is going to disrupt the waters of the norm. And so that is why, you know, these issues tend to, you know, impinge more on queer people as well as people who are sort of aware of these issues. So, kind of how the personal and the universal or the individual and the political interact is a little bit, I think, evident in this book, although I hope it's not an overarching issue. I'm more interested in sort of what happens to individuals' lives.
Well, now you finished Complementary Colors a while ago, mm-hmm. so you must be well into your next novel. What's your next one? Where are you going, novelistically?
I'm working on a few things right now, and mostly I'm working on legal documents for my divorce.
Is that going to be some? I mean, do you feel mm-hmm. that's going to be a novel? The breakup, mm-hmm. the divorce, the has-beenism.
Has-beenism. Yes, I'm working on a nonfiction book about has-beens.
Oh.
And I'm also working on a novel that it's taking a lot of different potential forms. I'm just sort of playing around with characters. Online dating is going to play part of the play into the novel in one way or another. But, you know, right. When I was going through the real difficult at parts, it's still difficult, but the extremely excruciatingly difficult parts of the breakup, I couldn't write for a while, of course. And then when I began to, I mostly was interested in writing poetry for a while. And but now I find myself coming back to prose. It feels good.
Yeah.
Feels healing.
And so this personal upheaval in your life, you think it'll eventually be good for your art?
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
All intense experiences are.
But now, tell me a little bit about the nonfiction aspect of this. I mean, Do you think the experience you had is, common is the wrong word, but do you think there are many people who have this experience in common with you?
Sure. That's what I'm investigating right now and writing about, and that's why I read Jan Klaassen's book and am interviewing some women who've had similar experiences, and I'm just interested in investigating, you know, what went through their lives and their minds and their bodies and their spirits in you know, this experience. Because, you know, we always hear about it the other way, as though there's only one direction coming out, right, coming out as a, quote, gay person.
Right.
When in fact, you know, there's a lot of bisexuality in the world. There are a lot of people who, for them, it's about the person they happen to fall in love with. For some people, it's about you know, maybe denying a certain part of themselves, either as a straight person or as a gay person, and then coming into whatever it is that makes them feel more full and whole. And of course, you know, we're growing, changing human beings. I mean, I never called myself straight before I fell in love with a woman. And then during our 15-year relationship, I found myself, and when I was initially in that relationship, I thought, oh, wow, that's weird. The word lesbian doesn't quite fit me. And then eventually it was lesbian. And then I began to call myself a bisexual lesbian because I wanted to honor the fact that most of my life I had been with men, or not even honor, but just acknowledge that this is part of who I am, you know? And now I'm not affixed to any label. I mean, I use hasbian as a sort of almost a joke.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a funny word in a way. And I'm not saying that I could never imagine myself being with a woman again, but it's just definitely not where my energy is. And it is hard to imagine it ever happening again, but I suppose it's possible. Anything's possible. Change is life. Life is change.
Well, one of the kind of arguments or discussions about homosexuality is that people who are homosexual, and the reason we should accept them is because they've always known that they were mm-hmm. homosexual, and that mm-hmm. it's maybe genetic or whatever. So mm-hmm. you're kind of a counter argument to that idea.
I know the right wing's going to love me. They don't know what they're in for, though. no, I think it's a double-edged sword, and you really can't win with that argument, because usually the foundation of that argument is there's something wrong with being gay. So, you know, you can't change it even if you want to. So there's something wrong with being gay. Or those that argue that you can, quote, decide who you want to fall in love with are still coming from the point of view often that there's something wrong with being gay. I say there's nothing wrong with any expression of love as long as it doesn't involve, you know, abuse, you know, or, yeah, essentially, you know. And so I come from the position if somebody feels like they choose, great. If somebody feels they were born that way, great.
All right, then. You don't have to hit me.
Slap.
this book, and it's a very beautiful book, published by the Vanilla Heart Publishing. They published your last book also?
They did.
Yeah.
They're a sweet little outfit up in the Seattle area.
And it's called Complementary Colors.
Mm-hmm.
And the author is Kate Evans, her first book for the May Queen, also highly recommended by yours truly. Kate, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gary.
That's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. Hope you enjoyed the program, and I'll be back again next week with another great show. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, Miss Brianne Beale, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Brianne. And I want to thank Kate Evans for being with me this week. Check out our podcast page at KUSP.org, and you can also find us on iTunes and Facebook. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.